This episode is brought to you by the 5-Day Money Challenge. Get your stuff together with money and increase your confidence in just 5 days. Save your seat at whitneyhanson.com/moneychallenge and join in on the fun. Hello and welcome to the Money Nerds Podcast, where owning a calculator, budgeting your money, and having a net worth is actually cool. I'm your host, Whitney Hanson, and each week I'll be chatting with inspiring people to learn their secrets to financial success. Now let's dive into the show. Hey guys, welcome back. Today is going to be amazing. We have all things real estate investing, how to buy your first home, all of these different things that I personally am very interested in. This is something that I'm hoping to do eventually in my life. So I brought on our first repeat guest, Mindy Jensen, to talk about her experience because she is probably one of the most knowledgeable people I know when it comes to real estate investing. And more importantly, how to do this, but still live your life. I really appreciate her philosophy there. So before we dive into that, I want to share a really pretty kick butt money win with you guys. Okay. So the money win for today comes from Paul. And Paul says, I paid off the remaining $13,200 on my student loan on Monday and am now 100% debt free. Hashtag money win. Paul, congratulations. That is so amazing. I'm so proud of you for doing that. Sometimes it's not so easy to make such a big payment, but the fact that you did it and you're now 100% debt free just frees up your income for doing so much more. And for you, it's probably travel, I'm pretty sure. All right, guys, let's go ahead and dive into today's episode. Today's episode, as I mentioned, is with Mindy Jensen. Mindy is amazing. She is a real estate investor. Her husband just retired officially at a very young age. He's in his mid-40s. So being able to retire that young is so impressive to me. They blog at 1500days.com, which is really cool. So 1500days.com. And what they did there is they started to kind of just put all of their information in one place where we can go follow along and learn more about financially independent retiring early. FIRE is kind of what the acronym is there. So you can learn more about that and more importantly, learn about real estate investing. So Mindy sent me over a list of a lot of really great blog posts that are all linked in the show notes. So if you want to learn more about this stuff, make sure you check out the show notes. Okay, in this episode, we talk about what PITI is, P-I-T-I, when it comes to your mortgage, how to avoid paying taxes when you sell your house, tips for positioning yourself to invest in real estate, things to think about when you're buying your first piece of real estate, what to do if you buy a house that used to be a meth house, what do you have to do with that process, why you should probably buy the ugly house in the nice neighborhood, finding properties that aren't even on the market yet. Mindy shares some really great tips on how you can go about that process. And I think one of the coolest things is house hacking. So she shares exactly what house hacking is, and more importantly, how that can be a very quick way, if you're good at this, to getting financially independent and retiring early. Super, super cool stuff. All of this and so much more. Guys, I am so excited to reintroduce you to Mindy Jensen from 1500days.com. All right, guys, so welcome back to another episode. Today I'm joined by our first second-time guest ever, Mindy Jensen! Mindy, yay! I am so excited. So we chatted, I can't remember what episode your initial one was. It was earlier on, and you shared a lot of really good tips, and I thought that your story was super inspirational because we focused on the debt piece. But today we're talking about real estate investing and a little bit about early retirement.
Yes. Well, thank you for having me back. I had a great time last time. I know this is going to be a fun conversation too. Let's start off with the early retirement piece. My husband is now retired. Retired. You got to put the air quotes in there because he's not actually sitting around doing nothing. You know, he's got a lot of things on his plate. The other day he said, wow, I'm really glad I don't have a job. I'm too busy to work. Like he's got so many projects he wants to work on and work just always got in the way. So now he is official. I think it's been an entire week. What's today? Wednesday? Tuesday. So it's been like a week and a half since he has officially not had a job and he feels great. I'm happy for him. And he has not been happier in a very long time.
That's so cool. Okay. So what did he retire from and how old?
He is 43 and he retired. He worked for the Veterans Administration. He was a computer programmer.
Oh, cool. And 43 years old and retired.
43 and retired. Yes.
That is amazing. So what, okay, let's talk about that a little bit. Why 43 and retired? Like so many people are like, oh, you know, I'll just wait till 65 and no big deal. So what was the driver for you guys there?
His job was kind of stressful. He worked on a medical device that if it failed would kill people, could kill people. And that's, you know, that's a really stressful thing. He did that for the last 15 years. And one day he was just having a really not awesome day at work and he was banging on the computer. How do I quit my job early? And this weird website came up, Mr. Money Mustache. And he started reading it and he's like, nah, this is garbage. This isn't really true. And then he read a little bit more. He's like, no, actually these numbers make sense. This is just like, this is math and you could really do this. We could really do this. So we started. I mean, we had always been frugal. We had always been savers and we just continued down that path. You know, we made little tweaks here and there. We stopped going out to dinner so much. We started tracking our spending and discovering that, you know, we say we never go out to eat, but then we go out to eat like six times a month. And it doesn't seem like a lot, but it adds up really quickly. So we just started making these little tiny tweaks and we caught a really good wave of real estate and stock market growth. Mm-hmm. And that really helped us get to our goal number, mm-hmm. but we were halfway there. We had started saving to begin with. And so.
Gotcha. So, okay. I got to follow up on a couple pieces. So you said that you guys are making little tweaks, which I appreciate you sharing because so many of us think that the little things don't matter. You know, if I go spend a couple $100 a month on eating out, that's not going to make or break my retirement. So can you touch on that really quickly?
Yeah. You know, I actually, very early on in our blogging career, I guess.
And tell everybody where your blog is.
Our blog is 1500days.com. That's 1500days.com. Okay. Very early on, I wrote this article that said, it's only a dollar. And it was inspired by people that we knew that, oh, it's only a dollar. I'll just buy it. And you go to the dollar store and you buy one only a dollar thing. It's only a dollar. But if you get a whole basket full of only a dollar things, there's $20. And really in the whole grand scheme of life, what's $20? It's not that much. But if your $20 is every single day, or you go out to lunch and it's only $10. Look, they've got a $10 special for lunch every day. That's $50 a week, which is like $200 a month. You could invest that $200 a month and it'll be a lot bigger down the road. The concept of these little tiny things, does it really enrich your life to go out to lunch every single day? No. You can, you're slogging away at work, bring a sandwich. Mm-hmm. Get an extra hour of work done, or bring a sandwich and walk around the neighborhood, or have some soup. Sometimes you can go to the grocery store and Progresso soup is like on sale for a dollar. That's a really good can of soup. And it's a dollar. It's only a dollar, but there's your lunch for a dollar instead of your lunch for $10. So $5 gets you a whole week's worth of lunches. I mean, soup's not that filling, so probably you want to bring something else, but you know, there's little things you can do to tweak. And just because you decide not to go out to lunch anymore doesn't mean that you can never go out to lunch. If your best friend Carol at work is having a birthday, sure, go out to lunch with her. Because that's a small amount of money. One time. It's not a small amount of money every single day. Mm.
Or even like a few times a week. Because even that, if you don't have the income, especially if you're like barely scraping by, that adds up significantly and it really hurts. But I think one of the cool things that you guys did that I think is really amazing is you were taking that money and you were preparing yourself for the market downturn. So you say, oh yeah, it was good timing. It's like the market went down and then stocks went up and like we were great. But everybody in our life, we all go through a couple of those typically. So it's not something that you're never going to be ready for. They always happen. Like it's very predictable that you're going to market's going to go down. It'll go back up. You could in theory make a lot of money, but you've got to be ready for that.
Exactly. And I want to piggyback on that.
Yeah.
it's predictable that it will happen, but it's not predictable when it will happen. I mean, if I knew that the stock market was going to drop tomorrow, I sure would pull everything out today mm-hmm. and then go back and buy it tomorrow, because then I could just buy so much more. But right. I don't know when the stock market is going to go down. So I don't know when the real estate market is going to go down. So you just be prepared. And, you know, having a sandwich out every day of the week doesn't change my life in such a beneficial way, but having a huge cushion mm-hmm. that I know is there to catch me when I fall absolutely benefits me every single day.
I think that's such a good point too, is that this, you've got to be prepared. So when it appears like luck from an outside perspective, it's not luck. You were just ready. You had the money ready to move at that right time. So let's start talking a little bit about some of the real estate stuff. How did you guys even get into real estate investing?
I happened into it. I had a friend 100 years ago. I had a friend who had an apartment lease that she was unable to keep. And I said, oh, well, I want to move out of my parents' house. I'll just take it over. And I didn't. We didn't talk to her landlord. She moved out and I moved in, and it was like, I kept paying the rent. I didn't think it was an issue because neither one of us ever read the lease. And then I discovered that I really hated paying rent because when I moved out, I got no money back. I just didn't have to pay rent anymore. So I found a property not too far away, a condo that was $7 a month more than my rent, including my mortgage payment, my taxes, my home insurance, my principal interest. Oh, my mortgage payment is principal and interest. I'm trying to think, what does PITI mean? PITI is a type of mortgage. It's where you take the principal of your loan, the interest, the taxes, and the insurance, and it's all wrapped into one. So you are, you just write one check instead of three.
Gotcha. And that's PITI, P-I-T-Y?
P-I-T-I, principal, interest, taxes, and insurance, like your homeowner's insurance. When you have a mortgage on a property, your mortgage holder requires you to have insurance. So in case the whole place burns down, they're not out of luck.
Yeah, go figure.
yeah. Similar to a car, when you have a loan on a car, they make you have full insurance.
Yeah. Okay. So then you found this lease, you found out you could actually do your own condo, and then you just jumped on it, or how did that process go down?
Yeah, I jumped on it. I bought this. This was several years ago. I paid $49,000 for my first condo.
Nice.
And yeah. And a few years later, after we got married, he had a house. So we sold my condo for $75,000. And I had done a little bit of work on it, but not that much. I had put in a new tile floor, and I had painted all the walls. And all of a sudden, there's all this extra money. I'm like, wow, for almost nothing. Oh, and I fixed the dishwasher. It was broken. these tiny little things made the whole place look so much better. So we sold it, and then we moved into his place. We decided that we didn't want to live in his house anymore. We fixed it up a little bit. We sold it for, gosh, I want to say $100,000 more than we bought it for. Because again, we weren't lucky. We didn't time the market. We were fortunate that there was this upswing in property values. And it just kind of snowballed from there. We found another house that was really ugly. We moved into it. We fixed it up. If you live in a home for two of the last five, live in and own a home for two of the last 5 years, you pay no capital gains taxes when you move out, when you sell it, which means that you buy it for $100,000, you sell it for $200,000, that $100,000 goes into your pocket, which can be very lucrative. There are some rules, because it's a government program, of course, there are rules. If you are single, the limit is $250,000. And if you are married, the limit is $500,000. And since you have to live in it and own it for the last 2 years, it is, you can only do it every 2 years.
Gotcha. Okay. So this is, it's pretty much tax-free. Like I can just literally put that. No way. Wow. So I can just put that in my bank account and be like, yeah.
Yeah. Huh. But you have to live there. So if you're doing a rehab, you're actually living through the rehab, which can be a little difficult, especially of children. You know, every rehab's different. If you're replacing a whole kitchen, you can do that fairly quickly. It's not that messy. But if you're re-drywalling the whole house, it is a disaster. So yeah,
for years to come.
Yeah, you're finding drywall dust for months afterwards. You can't vacuum enough.
No, it's terrible. So this is super interesting. So for somebody that's listening in, that's like, yep, I want that life. Like that is exactly what I want to do. Sign me up, Mindy. How do we do this? Like, how do we position ourselves in a place where we can make these really awesome investments that are going to turn a little bit of profit and we can start banking up some cash?
Well, the primary thing is to find an ugly house.
Okay.
That in a market, let's say like a San Francisco or a New York, isn't going to be the best way to get in for little money. But, sure. You know, San Francisco real estate is so expensive. You can make money in San Francisco real estate, but that's not the focus of this conversation. Yeah. A Midwest town, mm-hmm. someplace with a much lower barrier or much lower entry price. Is a best option. And, you know, Kansas City, Missouri has a very healthy real estate market mm-hmm. where house prices are low, but rents are pretty good. So let's say, you are buying a house, you could buy a house for $100,000. It's a pretty decent house for $100,000. $100,000 isn't even a down payment in San Francisco.
No, not at all.
Same with the Chicago area, not downtown Chicago, but there's huge amount of suburbs in the Chicago area. Ohio is also a really popular market. So just a lower price, like Central America, Central United States market. Mm-hmm. You want to look for houses that are, when the houses are fixed up, they're selling for a lot more. It doesn't do you any good to spend $50,000 on a house and then sell it for $50,000 more than you paid for it.
Gotcha. Yeah.
You're actually losing money in that case when you get count in real estate transaction fees and all of that. But a sturdy yet unattractive house, like think 1960s that hasn't been updated yet, or the 1970s is a really ugly era where the houses were still really sturdy.
Yeah.
So if you walk in and they've got the avocado green refrigerator, chances are really good there's not much else that's been updated in that house. So just, you know, and there's different levels of updating. Maybe there's just cosmetic. Oh, I think, did my camera freeze?
Yeah, your camera's froze, but I can still hear you.
Okay, well, let's just talk. I'm so glad it froze like that.
Is mine frozen too? I probably am like...
It isn't.
Oh, good. Usually it does on the most unflattering pictures ever.
Always the most unflattering pictures.
Yep.
So you want to get a sturdy house and you want to have a good scope of the work. Ugly paint is great. Broken foundation is not so great, especially for your first investment, or if you don't have a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Anything can be fixed. But a broken foundation is going to cost a lot more than a gallon of paint.
Mm. And so you only know that by partnering with people to come in and check out the property. Is that correct?
I don't know that partner is the right word, but you know that by hiring a home inspector mm-hmm. to come in and inspect the house. And a home inspector isn't a guarantee that you're going to find everything that's wrong with the house. But a home inspector comes in and gives you a snapshot of the condition of the home at the time that you're buying it. So, the furnace is 12 years old. Typically a furnace lasts around 25 years. So you probably are halfway through the furnace's life. However, that doesn't mean that the furnace is guaranteed for the next 12 years. Mm-hmm. That just tells you right now the furnace is 12 years old. The hot water heater is 10 years old. Typically they only last 8 years. So you should count on having to replace the hot water heater. Knowing this before you buy the house, you can ask the sellers, I would like you to give me a credit for the cost of a water heater, or I would like you to split it down the middle, or, you know, the home, after you get a home under contract, you have found it, you've decided you want to buy it, you put it under contract, the seller accepts your contract, that's when you bring in a home inspector. Okay. Because a home inspector does cost money, between $400 and $800, depending on what it is they're inspecting. So you want to make sure that you're not spending that money before you have the house under contract, but you want them to be thorough and go through the house and, you know, show you things. Oh, this outlet doesn't work. Well, that's not a huge deal. That shouldn't be a deal breaker. The roof is going to cave in tomorrow. That's more of a big issue. So if you're starting out young and you don't have a ton of experience or a ton of money, you want to listen to the inspector when he says these giant things. And, you know, if you're unsure, ask a question. Be there for the home inspection and ask the question, hey, you said the roof's going to cave in. That sounds really bad. Mm-hmm. And he could, you know, that's when he will be able to say, oh, no, I was just kidding. Or, oh, no, you misunderstood me or whatever.
Okay. So what are those, like, those big red flag things? I know structural, that's something you probably, especially first property, want to steer clear of. Roof sounds like if it's a big issue, you probably want to steer clear of. Is there anything else that we need to, like, big red flags for first investments where it's like, run away, it's not worth it?
Yeah, some environmental issues that you don't really have control over, like an unremediated meth house. Meth is on the rise everywhere. And you might think, oh, I'll just paint the walls and everything will be fine. And to remediate a meth house, you have to remove all the drywall. You have to remove all the carpeting. You have to hire a company that comes in and it's like a $35,000 job or a $70,000 job. It's not a slap a coat of paint and be done.
Wow.
So you want to know about that beforehand. You want to know that there's a, you know, the basement floods every time it rains. Mm-hmm. You want, and there's ways to tell by looking at the basement walls. You know, you can see the little wavy water lines, mm-hmm. or maybe the drywall is puffing up at the bottom. It is a sad fact that there are some people, some sellers who are trying to get out of their house. So they don't tell you everything that's wrong with the house.
Oh, wow.
Which is another reason why you want to get a home inspector. There's some things that they just don't know. Like they never used the outlet behind the desk, so they didn't know it didn't work. I'm writing a book on how to sell your house, and I'm doing some research on seller property disclosures that didn't disclose all the information. There was a house in St. Louis area. They had 4,500 to 6,000 brown recluse spiders in the house.
What?
Those, their bite can be lethal. And they had just this massive swarm. The previous owners didn't disclose that to the buyers. The buyers moved in and 2 weeks later, they're like, why are these spiders everywhere?
Oh my God.
Yeah. It's kind of a long drawn out mess because then the people who sold the property, obviously they knew about it. You don't just move in and all of a sudden there's 4,500 spiders. And they very obviously didn't. I know I'm getting the heebie-jeebies just
that
talking about it.
Disgusting.
They had to, the buyers had to leave. It can be soul crushing to be in this position. There's a friend of mine was just in town and her cousin bought a house in the Midwest and the house was built like on a retention pond lot. Mm. She moved in and 2 weeks later, the basement has 10 inches of water in it.
Oh my gosh.
So now she's embroiled in a big, lawsuit against the builders. So there's getting a home inspection isn't going to find everything, but it'll help you find a lot. It'll help you find most everything. And it's definitely something you should do if you are new, unless you're just tearing down the whole house, you need to have an idea of what's going on with that house.
Okay, that's fair.
So we've got structural issues and environmental issues. What are other red flags? Like maybe even just the scope of the work. If you've got, you know, if every single inch of that house needs to be touched, maybe that's not a house you want to tackle. Maybe you don't want to have that big of a job on your first one. Our first property, we put in new cabinets and countertops in the kitchen, and we installed a new floor in the master bedroom and then just painted every wall. So not a lot. It significantly changed the look of the house because the kitchen was unbelievably ugly. Mm-hmm. But new cabinets are easy to install. Mm-hmm. New flooring is easy to install. New, you know, anybody can paint.
Right.
So we tackled that. We made, I think we made $50,000 when we sold that house.
Not bad.
And then, you know, moved to the next house. The next house was a much larger project. We took, oh wait, no, that wasn't the next house. We've done a lot.
You've probably, how many houses have you done so far out of curiosity?
Eight.
Holy crap.
But we live in them. So it's, it takes us longer because we live in them specifically to get that tax-free yep. advantage. The next house, we put in another new kitchen and we'll paint. I think that's all we did was paint and kitchen. And then the next house, we added a second story. If you want to, you know, if you buy this tiny little house in a sea of houses that are much bigger, adding a second story makes a lot of sense. But if you buy a tiny little house in a sea of other tiny little houses, adding a second story may not make the most sense. You know, just having an extra house. It's always best to buy the ugliest house in the nicest neighborhood versus the nicest house in a really ugly neighborhood. If you think about it, if all the other houses in the neighborhood, let's say they're selling for $100,000 and you want to get $175,000 for your house. Well, people who are looking for a house that costs $175,000 aren't looking in $100,000 neighborhoods. They're looking in $175,000 neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. So you want to put your head in the buyer's head.
Okay, that's fair. So how do you, I would think that houses like this that may require a little bit of work, but maybe not to the scope is doable. I would think those would go crazy fast on the market. So is there a way to like find them and be ready for them before anybody else?
There are actually. And you know, it depends on the buyer. Mm. Actually, I love an ugly house because I can go in and fix it up and make it look nice. But there are a lot of people who want nothing to do with fixing it up. They want to buy it already fixed up. They don't want to spend any time. It's not worth it to them. Mm-hmm. They, you know, they spend their time in other ways. So there's not as much competition as you would think for these ugly houses. But with the rise of the HGTV shows, flip this house and all of that, there is more competition for it. One way to get these houses is to get them before they're on the market, before they've been listed with a real estate agent on the, it's called the MLS, the multiple listing service. That's where real estate agents list all of their homes. When you're looking for a house, that's where your real estate agent pulls all the listings to send to you. Mm-hmm. So the way to do that is to identify a neighborhood. When we lived in, when I sold my condo and moved in with my husband after we got married, his whole neighborhood was this kind of anomaly. It was a fairly big neighborhood, probably 50 or 60 houses on small houses on large lots, fairly close to a major metropolitan area.
Nice.
Definitely within commuting distance. But every single house in the neighborhood when we lived there was small, like 1,300 square feet on half acre lots. So there was plenty of room to build a much bigger house. Mm-hmm. So, you know, identifying a neighborhood like that, oh, wow, I bet some of these houses are really ugly. It was a lot of the people that were living there were still initial owners. So, you know, they've been living there 30, 40 years. They're older. It's a fact of life, the circle of life. They're dying off or going into a nursing home, or dying off sounds so ugly. they're passing away, and then their kids are stuck with this house. What am I going to do with this house? I don't want it. It's ugly. I've got my own, whatever. Or I'm across the country or.
Yeah.
So identifying these homes, these neighborhoods, and then just sending an email or I'm sorry, a letter, not an email.
In this day. Like, hey, get their emails. Email. I'm like, that's amazing.
That'd be awesome. But no, send a letter. Hey, I think that your house is interesting. I'd like to buy it. When I send a letter like this, I'm actually a licensed real estate agent and I'm required by law to disclose this. So I send them a letter that says, I think your house is interesting. You've kept it up very well, or, you know, it looks like it's fallen into a state of disrepair, whichever applies. Mm-hmm. While I'm a real estate agent, I'm not looking to list it. I'm actually looking to purchase it. If you're ever thinking about selling, I'd like to buy it. And then I give them every single way they can contact me, my street address, my telephone number, my website, my email address, because somebody will be able to figure out one way of communication. There's a little old lady down the street who actually walked over to my house. Aww. And it was very sweet. She's like, well, we're not ready to sell right now. And I said, well, anytime you're ready, I'm here. Just keep my letter. And, you know, sometimes that works. Sometimes you can get that before there's this influx of real estate investors mm-hmm. who want to grab that. It actually helps if you are going to live in the house
okay.
to say that in the letter. Hey, I'm looking for a house, especially if you're in a hot real estate market. I'm looking for a house. I'm having a hard time finding one, you know, for me and my dog or me and my kid or me in general. Mm-hmm. And that can be a really great way to get your foot in the door. Some of these people that have, you know, the very first owner of the house, they don't want to see the neighborhood changing and all these investors are coming in.
True.
They don't want to, you know, just sell it to anybody. They want to sell it to a nice young family that's going to raise their kids there. Or, you know, I've moved around a lot as a child, as an adult, so I don't have the same mm-hmm. Deep connections to a home that some other people might. But I can understand why they wouldn't want to just see all of their memories gone because some investor came in and bulldozed their house. So, you know, write a letter, write a heartfelt letter. Hey, I think the garden's beautiful. Or, you know, I'd like to keep up your roses or whatever, you know, but make it personal about the house.
Okay. I'm taking notes. This is actually super, super interesting because I have one property right now that I live in and I'm going through this scenario in my head. So I'll get personal with everybody for a sec. I purchased my home for $143,000. And I could sell my house today with talking exactly what you said, all of the remodeling and all of the fixing up, all of that stuff in my neighborhood, I could probably get about $210,000 out of my house.
Wow, nice.
And so now I'm in this scenario where I'm like, ooh, what do you do? You know, so do you take that money? And then our market's a little bit high. I live in Boise, Idaho. We have a housing shortage right now, which is kind of, it's a good problem to have, I think, but it's like, okay, then what do I do? So I think this is all very relevant, but I like this idea of like finding that house to fix up and moving in there, living there for a couple of years, making all of that money, which is incredible. And then keep going with that cycle. Cause I mean, 8 houses in is what you guys are looking at. That's
yes.
Not that much, actually, you know?
It's, well, when we live in them for 2 years, that's 16 years mm-hmm. that we've been doing this. And, you know, moving every 2 years is kind of a hassle, but it's not that much of a hassle. When we didn't have kids, it was a lot easier.
Oh, yeah.
Having kids makes it a lot more difficult.
You know, I hear that.
Yeah. Well, not only do you have to pack up your stuff, you have to pack up their stuff. Yeah. And living with them in a construction zone, I know not to go over and touch those bare wires, but they might not if they're little. There's a big nail sticking out of the wall. You can bet their little arm's going to find it.
And character building.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so this is cool. So I like the letter thing. Do you have any other tips on finding properties that are not on the market yet?
Tell everybody you know what you're doing.
Okay.
Tell absolutely everybody, because you don't know that maybe your best friend's neighbor just inherited her grandmother's house and she doesn't want it and she doesn't know what to do with it. You know, she's not going to call up everybody she knows. Hey, do you possibly want to buy this house? She's just going to list it with a real estate agent because she doesn't know what else to do with it. And you do not need to have a real estate agent help you buy or sell a house. You can do it all on your own. I don't recommend you do it all on your own, but you don't have to use a real estate agent. So if you, you know, your best friend's neighbor's grandmother's house is available and you want to move in, go to a real estate attorney. Hmm. Have them draw up all the documents. It's not going to be a contentious interaction because she wants to sell you the house for this price. You want to buy it for this price. You know, yes, you'll probably still have a home inspection. But you don't have to be rude about the, you know, oh, the roof's caving in. Oh, okay. Yeah. I kind of thought about that. I'll give you a discount, or, you know, I'd like a new roof, or I'd like, you know, it doesn't have to be a contentious relationship. And both of you going into the real estate attorney's office might work out great. You know, if you find a property off market, I do not recommend circumventing a real estate agent. If a property is already listed on the market, then you should go through the real estate agent, mm-hmm. or get your own, especially if you are newer, you should get your own agent. So they are looking out for your interests. The seller's agent is looking out for the seller's interests.
Yeah.
So that's good. You want to know.
Yeah. I don't think enough people talk about doing this on your own. I think it's a scary process, but I like the idea of going to a real estate attorney, getting the paperwork drawn up, because that's probably the scariest part for most people is the legal documentation. So I think that's a good way to go.
Yeah. And you know, it's not just a one page form. The contract to buy and sell real estate in the state of Colorado where I live is 17 pages long, and it is filled with legalese, and you read it and you're like, oh, it means this. No, sometimes words mean one thing in English and a very different thing in legalese. So having somebody there to just double check who speaks both English and legalese is really this is the biggest purchase of your life, or, you know, up to now, mm-hmm. most likely. So why would you cheap out on a legal representation?
Right.
Why would you cheap out on the representation and somebody, you know, watching your back? But I wanted to circle back and talk about your property. You say in Boise, Idaho, there's a housing shortage. So what happens if you sell your property now? Where are you going to live?
See, that's the piece where I'm like, I don't know. I wouldn't really want to rent. I kind of believe you should always be in the market, but I don't know.
And so, well, if you, you know, can you find something for $143 again? If you bought at $143 and then you sell at $210, but everything else is going for $210 or higher, mm-hmm. you're not really making any money.
Right.
Because now you're just getting a higher mortgage. Yeah, you'll take that $210 that you just had and put it down on the new house, but you still had the mortgage from the $143. So there's a lot of growth there, but you know, where are you? You're not really getting yourself ahead.
No.
Now, if you could take this house and sell it for $210 and then go buy another property for maybe $150, you would be really ahead of the game. You could put down significantly more if being completely debt-free is your goal.
Oh, yeah.
You could, have you ever thought about renting out a room in your house?
Oh, I currently do.
Oh.
So my little brother's my roommate. Poor guy.
My little brother was my roommate too.
It's a good way to go. You know, I've got six siblings. I got lots of revenue streams there.
Not exactly. And you know them. So you know that they're not going to be like crazy to live with because you've already lived with them.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
It works.
Yeah, it does work. That is something that we at Bigger Pockets call house hacking.
Okay.
That's when you buy a property that is larger than you need. Maybe it has more bedrooms than you need, or maybe it's a small multifamily property like a duplex, which is two houses stuck together, or a triplex is three and a quadplex is four. Up to four units in one property mm-hmm. can still be purchased with a residential mortgage.
Oh, interesting.
A residential mortgage comes with a lower interest rate than a commercial mortgage, and depending on what kind of mortgage you get, you can lock in your rate for up to, I think, 40 years now.
Wow.
So as opposed to a commercial loan, which comes with five or more properties, has to be purchased with a commercial loan. A commercial loan, typically you lock in your rate for 5 years and then it readjusts, or balloon payment, and you refinance the balloon payment. Mm-hmm. There's benefits to both. With a residential mortgage, you are responsible for qualifying for the mortgage. They look at your credit history and your income. With a commercial mortgage, they look more at the actual property and the history of the income of the property.
Hmm.
But commercial mortgage is not my specialty. Commercial real estate is not my specialty. I focus on the residential. So let's say you buy a duplex.
Mm-hmm.
You live in one side. and you rent out the other side. Typically, a whole house will rent out for more than an apartment. Mm-hmm. So I live next door to a duplex, and on either side, it is $1,200 for the rent. And the whole place was purchased for $240,000.
Oh my gosh.
So that $1,200 from the one side is almost paying the whole mortgage.
Yeah.
And you still have your own property. You don't have to live with anybody if you don't want to. Mm-hmm. You could go one step further and rent out a bedroom in your house. So let's say you rent it out for $400. You're probably already paying your entire mortgage. That's you're not bringing in a lot of cash flow from that. Mm-hmm. At those numbers, but you're still not paying your own rent anymore. You are living for free.
Yeah. And think about like what you can do with that too, when you don't have to pay a mortgage or a rent payment.
Oh, exactly. You can like blast through your debt. Mm-hmm. If you have credit card debt, let's say that you want to be mortgage free. You can take the $800 that you would normally be paying and just throw that at the principal of the loan, and you're going to pay off your mortgage. I don't run mortgage numbers in my head so quickly, but you're going to pay it off, you know, 5 years, 10 years. It's just going to blast through it.
It's amazing. So this is, God, I'm like having so much fun with this. I want to chat with you literally all day long. Can we talk a little bit about the investing piece? So the actual, like what do you need to do to get prepared to purchase? So do you need 10% down? Do you need 20% down? Do you have any like rules of thumb there?
It's actually not a rule of thumb. It's an actual rule to the FHA loan, the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac loan, program comes, you can get that as low as 3.5% down.
Wow.
And there's trade-offs for, I think every mortgage that you are owner occupying, where you're living in the home, either the 1-4 properties, mm-hmm. or the 1-4 unit properties. If you're going to live in that property, you can have, you pay 20% down, and then you're not charged private mortgage insurance or PMI, yeah. which is a monthly charge. That's a couple hundred bucks a month, depending on your credit status, the amount that you borrowed, you know, where you're at, et cetera. But I mean, a couple hundred dollars is still a couple hundred dollars. If you can avoid that, that's better. I really like just being in a house, owning a property. Mm-hmm. So the 3.5% down, if that's what you can come up with, let's say your property is $100,000 for the sake of math, that's $3,500 down. It's not that hard to save up $3,500, get a second job and throw it all in there. You can have a property by the end of the year. So with an FHA, you can have as low as 3.5% down. A conventional loan, depending on how awesome your credit is, can be had for as low as 3% down, but you're looking at like 850 credit scores and low debt to income ratio, a more typical down payment is 5% or 10% for the conventional loans. There are a couple of programs. The VA loan, which is for veterans, comes 0% down. Wow. And the USDA loan is for rural or agricultural areas. And that also has a 0% down.
Holy crap.
Yeah. So if you're a veteran, that's great. The only veterans can take advantage of the VA loans. But I think that's a nice perk for them.
Yeah.
You know, they come back from war. They don't really have a lot of money. They can find a house, move in for almost nothing.
Quick question on the PMI thing too, because I'm thinking if your goal is to live in a house for 2 years, fix it up, make it cute, and then flip it, with the PMI, if you were to walk in with a lower down, say 3.5 is all you put down on this house, how does that work when you go to sell? Do you have to like pay that off of what you would have paid, or do you know how that works?
No, it's an insurance premium. So once you no longer have the mortgage, you don't have to guarantee that you will pay the mortgage. You don't have to pay insurance on your mortgage.
Okay.
So yeah, it gets wiped out, and the PMI actually gets even better when you have 20%, the equivalent of 20% equity in the home from the time of purchase. Like you buy it at 100% or at $100,000, you put down $3,500. When you've paid off enough of the principal that you now only owe $80,000 left, 80% left, you can request that they remove the PMI. And when it gets to 22% equity, they have to take off the PMI. Now that's just for the conventional mortgage. For an FHA mortgage, it's called MIP, mortgage insurance premium, and it stays for the life of the loan. So you have to refinance out of it. You can't just ask them to take it away.
Okay, that makes sense. Gotcha.
But it's still, you know, it's still a great way to get into a home if you don't have, I mean, it's a lot easier to save up $3,500 than it is to save up $20,000.
Right. Well, I'm really into this idea of, because I think it's a lot more realistic and attainable than people think. Of saving up.
I think so too.
I mean, it's and you're living proof too. It's like you guys are kicking butt. I mean, I don't want to show your exact numbers, but you've built up quite a pretty impressive net worth. And it sounds like a lot of that was tax-free, which is really cool.
Yeah, that was really cool. Like a lot of that was tax-free. I would say probably $150,000 or $200,000 of that initial, you know, when we first started our blog, we had $500,000. So a lot of that came from the profits of flipping these houses that we lived in. You know, it wasn't all fun and games, but I sure like $150,000 versus, you know, going out for drinks at a bar.
Hell yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, I'll definitely take the money over drinks at the bar any day. This is so interesting. Okay, so I think this gives us a good way to start. You've given us some really good tips about how to find the properties that aren't currently listed, how to finance, what your options might be. I think this is super, super interesting. And I think if people have other questions, what's the best place for them to connect with you and be like, Mindy, what the hell do I do next?
They can send me an email at mrs1500@1500days.com. I have some articles on 1500days.com. One is called I Love Owning a Home, and it is 1500days.com/, well, let's link to it in the show
notes.
We'll
link to it.
Yeah. Love-owning-home. And it talks about how I built the core of my nest egg with live-in flips, which is what it's called when you live in your flip. And I've got pictures of really ugly cabinets that I had, really ugly, a really ugly house that I bought and made beautiful.
Cool.
How to start flipping houses. You know, it's not as difficult as you think it is. It's not as easy as you think it is. It's work. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to, you know, I don't want to give people the mistaken impression like they do on some of those other TV shows where, oh, I bought this house, I had a problem, blam, $100,000 in my pocket. You know, you really can lose a lot of money flipping houses if you're not smart.
Yeah.
But you can lose a lot of money doing a lot of things if you're not smart. So if you are smart about it, if you really take the time to learn about it and, you know, understand it, you can make a lot of money investing in real estate and flipping houses. So I will send several links to sites, to articles that I've written about just real estate in general.
Cool. Okay. And that will all be linked in the show notes. One more quick question too, because this just hit me. For this real estate flipping to actually be profitable, does that typically require that you do most of the work yourself?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
One of the most difficult tasks in flipping a house is finding a contractor that you can trust. There's just no shortage of bad contractors out there. When the market cratered in 2008, all the good contractors continued working. There's still people that need their houses fixed up or need houses built. But a lot of the bad contractors went away. And now that the market is so crazy again, in a lot of places, these people who have no experience or don't have time management skills, I think a lot of them aren't out to just outright scam you. They just don't know what they're doing, or they don't know how to run a business. So finding a contractor is very difficult. you're going to pay for their expertise. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you don't work for free. I don't work for free. They're not going to work for free. But, you know, not everything needs to be done by a contractor. We do a lot of the interior work ourselves because we've done it before. It's not hard to lay tile floor. Mm-mm. It's not hard to paint a wall. It's really easy to let somebody else come in and hang that drywall because, yes, you can do it. Drywall is really heavy and it'll take you 9 times as long to get the same look as a professional. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a good, you just have to figure out the balance between how much does it cost, how long will it take them to do it versus me to do it, mm-hmm. and do I have any interest in doing it? But you can still make money flipping a house even if you hire jobs out.
Okay, that's good to know. Yeah, I'm kind of like you. I tend to do most of the work myself. I think it's kind of fun.
I do too.
It's so much fun. You get to play with power tools, and I just think it's cool. But if you're scared of that stuff and you're listening in and you're like, oh my God, this sounds so intimidating, start small. Painting is something anybody can do. Tiling is something you can do. Laminate flooring, I mean, it's not difficult. You just have to get your hands dirty and try it out.
Yeah, everything comes off. You can wash everything off your hands. Sometimes you have to wait till your skin sloughs it off.
No kidding.
But everything will eventually come off. And, you know, the big box stores have how-to classes all the time. They have a huge board right as you walk in. You know, Home Depot will teach you how to lay tile. They teach you at their store with their products, using, you know, their expert guys to come in, or girls, I'm not sexist, to come in and show you how to, you know, this is how you mix up the mortar. Mm-hmm. This is too thin. This is too thick. This is how you lay it on. This is how you do a tile job. And they let you do it with their materials. So cool. I don't recommend just, I'm going to rebuild this whole house by myself tomorrow. Like, it's going to take you longer than it is going to take a professional. But if you're saving 20, 30, 50, 112, 300% by doing it yourself, it makes it really worth it. Mm-hmm. And if you're living in the flip, you have to be there for 2 years anyway. I mean, there's really no reason to live in a flip if you're not going to live there for 2 years. It's not super pleasant. Mm-hmm. So if you have 2 years to tile the floor, do it right. Take your time.
I love this. This has been so much fun. Do you do any coaching? So if somebody was wanting to work directly with you and get some mentoring, do you do anything like that today?
I don't do any coaching right now. I've got a full-time job and 2 small kids, and although my husband doesn't do anything anymore.
Send him his way.
He's sitting on the other side of the room and giving me dirty looks.
So Carla, no, but
I love answering questions.
Cool. Okay. Well, we've got your email, and then people can connect with you in the Bigger Pockets community as well.
Yes, I am all over the Bigger Pockets community, all over the forums, as Mindy Jensen. I'm the community manager there. So if you are not a member of Bigger Pockets, but you'd like some information about real estate investing, go to biggerpockets.com. and sign up for a free account. I will be your first colleague and send me a note. I love talking about real estate and can do it all day long. I do it all day long.
Well, you're damn good at it too. So thank you so much. Any final words before we officially part ways?
I don't think so. Just believe in yourself. And if this is something you want, then try it out. Yeah. Get some education and jump in.
Sweet. Mindy, you're a rock star. Thank you so much for hanging out. This was so much fun.
Thank you for having me, Whitney. I had a great time.
All right, guys, what'd you think? I loved this episode. I thought it was so interesting to hear Mindy's perspective, especially hearing from somebody that's in the trenches doing this stuff and has been doing it for the past 10 years or so. I thought that was really cool to hear her story on a topic that I'm not really familiar with. So I learned a crap ton from Mindy. The part that I thought was super cool that I really took away, and I think we can all start implementing into our own lives, is maybe you're not going to be a real estate investor, and that's okay. But what can you do to house hack? How can you earn a little extra income? So for me, I rent a room out to my little brother, who is now moved to California for an internship for NASA. Pretty cool stuff. But he was renting a room from me. And so that was one way that I was helping cover my mortgage payment and helping him out at the same time. But do you have something in your your house that maybe you could do that with. Maybe you occasionally rent your house out on Airbnb, or you do a private room on Airbnb. I mean, start to think about those ways of how do you make a little extra money without doing a lot of extra work. That's what it's all about. And if you can figure out a way to do this, you'll definitely hit your financial goals a lot more quickly. But I think it's a really good story too, and it will make for good conversation for sure. But more than anything, it just helps you hit your financial goals. That's really the key piece that I see here. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. Do me a huge favor. Go on iTunes or Stitcher or SoundCloud or wherever you're listening and leave me a review. Let me know what you think of the show. It really does mean the world to me. And if you haven't done so already, subscribe. It's like one button click. Just go doo-doo, and you'll be subscribed and you'll get all of the latest episodes delivered right to your podcast player. So do both of those things for me. I will love you forever. Thank you. It helps the show's ratings a lot and it really does mean the world to me. All right, guys, that's it for today. Thank you so much for joining in, and I will see you next week for another episode of the Money Nerds Podcast.